Major funding for Telehell is provided by Dave's Archives. At Dave's Archives, he personally transfers, archives, and preserves classic commercials from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s and shares them with you. Don't forget about his Friday night live stream on, well, guess when? Go to davesarchives.com. By RetroCirc on YouTube. RetroCirc has a whole new look and a new attitude as they bring retro commercials like never before. Always look for RetroCirc with a Q at the end. Bring your team with their team with RetroCirc, a Broadcast Plaza server partner. By Kier's Nostalgia Corner, a collection of commercial compilations, retro nostalgic things, and other random things that come to mind. Look for her on YouTube at K-I-E-R-S Nostalgia Corner. And don't forget to check out her live streams early in the week. Could be Sundays, could be Mondays. Either way, they're fun days. And by the very generous benefactors who grace us on our Patreon at patreon.com/telehellpodcast, including Ed Beatty Jr., Rhonda Farrell, Rick Kalacki Jr., Chris Michaud, Meredith Morrissey, Rabbi Eitz, Spare Parts, and Neil Weinstein. Thank you. Ah, spring. The time of year where life begins anew. Where flowers are in bloom. Where birds can sing again. Where it rains so much that practically everywhere in the world looks like a suburb of Seattle. But when it's not raining, the weather gets warmer, and people are wearing fewer and fewer articles of clothing, thus causing members of both the opposite and or the same sex to be attracted to each other physically in the hopes that it can escalate from there. Of course, that's if you're a fully grown and consenting adult. If you're right on the cusp of becoming an adult, say, a teenager, spring can also mean one thing.
The Senior Prom.
That one night of the year that some people plan many years getting ready for. And where there's preparation, there's also pressure. Not just the pressure that you want the night to go off without a hitch, but also peer pressure that the outfit you wear and the date you wind up going out with exceeds the expectations of everybody else in the room. To say nothing of the pressures of wanting to
go all the way!
And if you don't believe me, think of today's subject as less of a TV movie and more of a series of cautionary tales.
I can't believe this is happening.
We're going to the prom.
It's the outrageous comedy with an all-star cast from The Cosby Show, Cheers, The Hogan Family, Newhart, Who's the Boss, and Growing Pains.
What's your poison?
This is deep.
And now, the labs are in high gear when everyone hits the floor to Dance Till Dawn.
And now, of all the podcasts out there, this is one of them. This is Telehell.
Okay, this one may be one of our more obscure titles, but in the interest of full disclosure, once upon a time, I once embarked on a hobby known as tape trading. And this was one of a couple of TV movies that I picked up over the years that I always thought was a little silly. Not silly enough for it to be considered a guilty pleasure, but still silly enough that it caught my attention down here. And you'll see why in just a moment. But first, much to my shock and amazement, this TV movie actually has one hair of a backstory. Which I say because most of the TV movies I cover down here don't usually have a lot to go on in terms of research. It's just, this is the movie, these are the stars, this is who wrote it, roll the film. But amazingly enough, 30 years after this movie aired on NBC, an honest-to-Satan retrospective was written about it in Variety in 2018. So thorough, in fact, that we will be referencing it from time to time down here. And in doing so, we gotta give credit where credit's due to article writer Danielle Terciano, I hope I'm getting that right, for making what will otherwise be an average TV movie seem as comprehensive as an e-true Hollywood story. So with that, let's begin with some pre-prom preparation. The movie, called Dance Till Dawn, was the brainchild of writers Andrew Gerdat and Steven Kreinberg, and was one of the few projects in the entertainment world to narrowly avoid the writer's strike of 1988. According to the Variety article, movie executive producer Larry Sanitsky felt, quote, "The whole idea of the prom was a universal thing for everybody. Everybody had gone to a prom, or didn't go to a prom, or had a feeling about the prom. Overall, we did want to capture the fun of the prom, but we also wanted to capture some of the poignancy," end quote. That poignancy would be expressed through the help of the movie's very stacked all-star cast of performers from various NBC sitcoms, and also stars from other TV networks, up to and including Christina Applegate, Alyssa Milano, Tracy Gold, Tempest Bledsoe, Kelsey Grammer, Edie McClurg, Alan Thicke, Brian Bloom, and Matthew Oh, too soon.
You have to stop the Q-tip when there's resistance.
I'll try to keep my Chandler Bing references dignified here, but still, too soon. Anyway, Sanitsky said that Konigsberg used to talk about invoking Ingmar Bergman's Smiles of a Summer Night, a comedic movie featuring an ensemble with romantic complications who spend a night at a country house to sort themselves out, while he kept invoking the universality of problems that come with a prom, such as, do you have a date? The original title, according to movie music supervisor Richard Rudolph, was simply Senior Prom, and that inspired the theme song, which Rudolph wrote along with Michael Maniac Sembello, Rick Bell, and Frank LaRosa. We really tried to get into it and capture and become part of the emotional fabric of the piece and try and think about what these kids were thinking about and anticipating as they were going through their senior prom, which is a seminal and iconic moment in everybody's high school career, says Rudolph. There's a build-up to it and a feeling of, this is the greatest time of my life and nothing else is gonna compare. We tried to incorporate everything a kid thinks about and distill it down. Sanitsky recalls it was important to the producing team to keep the majority of the movie light and bright, even when dealing with some of the more serious issues. He credits both Rudolph, who also worked on the movie's score, and director Paul Schneider for executing that vision beyond Gerdat and Kreinberg's script. End quote. A script, ladies and gentle demons, that we're about to see come to life. October 23rd, 1988. The Boston Celtics play an exhibition game against Spain's national basketball team in Madrid. Super Mario Bros. 3 was released in Japan. And at 9 p.m., 8 p.m. Central, we get introduced to the participants one character at a time. Considering it's a two-hour movie, it's important to pace ourselves. First, we meet the school dork.
I'd like a corsage tonight for my date to the prom. It's a girl.
Oh, it's okay. Everybody's nervous on their prom night. Even us girls.
Oh, it's a relief. Guess I am a little bit nervous.
She must be pretty.
Oh, yeah. Oh, she's more than pretty. She's really cute.
Translation, his date is made up. But to be fair, anything scripted is considered made up in the first place, so we won't hold that against anybody. Next, we meet a pair of yuppie snoblings, played by Kelly Bundy and the future Chandler Bing.
I gotta get some Starlight Pink Blusher, and then run over the shoe store to get those Charles Jordan pumps because, I decided to wear the puce taffeta sheath, which is why you got the Pearl Grey Riviera tuxedo with the Dusty Rose tie and cummerbund.
Oh.
Oh, and you need to get me a corsage.
Oh, listen, couldn't you do that because...
Honestly, Roger, it is tradition that the guy gets the corsage.
Well, I'll give the writers of the movie credit for one thing at the beginning. They easily predicted how selfish Applegate's recurring role as Rachel's sister on Friends would be.
Amy, that's what I was supposed to wear today. That's why I hung it on the door. Oh, sweetie, you can't pull this off.
Next, we meet Alyssa Milano as the most popular girl in school who got dumped before prom, as well as Applegate rubbing her nose in it.
Shelly, you didn't RSVP to my after prom party. You and Kevin are going to be there, aren't you?
Well, actually, Patrice, I'm not sure if I'm going with Kevin tonight.
Oh, my God. You mean Kevin didn't ask you to the prom?
Ask me? Well, sure, of course he asked me. It's just that this college guy invited me to go to this frat party with him, and I'm not sure I'm going to make it to the prom.
Oh, my God, you're seeing a college guy?
Well, don't you think you should tell Kevin? He's standing right over there.
Which brings us to former soap opera actor Brian Bloom, who's pretty much there to be this movie's layer of scum.
Shelley, hi.
Look, Heather, I know you're upset about the last time we, you know, but I told you I'm just not ready yet. And I'm sorry that you rented the van and
Shelley,
everything, but...
we've been going out for 4 years. For 4 years, you've been getting ready and I've been getting horny.
A line that I'm sure will go over perfectly well in 21st century post-Me Too society, but go on.
Well, if that's all you want, then why don't you just ask Ramona Gielgud to the prom?
How do you know I haven't?
What? I mean, you and Ramona?
I don't have to tell you anything. What are you, my wife?
No, but I thought I was your girlfriend.
Think again.
Well, fine, because it doesn't really matter anyway, because I'm going to a frat party. Bye.
But, Alyssa, why would you go to a frat party when you have a perfectly good 27-year-old, 17-year-old high school student right in front of you? Wait, he actually was 18 years old in this? Huh. All the more reason to drink water with fluoride, I guess. As we now pivot to Tracy Gold and Tempest Bledsoe as the wallflowers of our bunch and their alternative prom plans.
Tonight we're gonna watch movies, eat popcorn, and pig out until dawn. I mean, come on, this is our prom night.
I know, but high school's over forever. In a few months, we'll be in college. I just wish I could stay in high school. Why couldn't I have flunked a grade?
As our attention now swings back to our 27-year-old looking 17-year-old who's actually 18 and what his alternative prom plans are now that he got dumped by one of the Hollowell sisters.
I can get a date, no problem. I got, what, 6 hours?
I feel sorry for you, my man. I mean, I don't know what I'd do if I had a woman who wouldn't give me any.
Yeah, give you any what? Wallace Gum? You expect me to believe that you and Lori have been,
Hey, I didn't say Lori, all right?
Then who? Angela Stroll?
Yeah, she's real easy. Well, she's an artist, you know.
No kidding.
Yeah, and she's not that bad looking either. Not once you get her out of those geeky clothes, you know what I mean?
So what you're saying is she's a sure thing?
Yeah. Aw, man, you're not gonna ask Angela Stroll to the prom, are you, Dole Stroll?
Sure thing.
So basically, he's trading Samantha Maselli for Carol Seaver. Much to Carol Seaver's surprise.
Actually, this was just an excuse so I could come in here and ask you to the prom.
What?
What do you say? Do you want to go?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Good. Great. I'll see you at 7:30.
I could be pedantic and say that one simply doesn't just go to the prom. You actually have to pay for a lot of it, including admission to the dance, the limo, the flowers, the dress, the tux, the food, the hotels, the condoms, and the morning after pills. But this is just a friendly reminder that this is just a movie, and that belief needs to be as suspended as a Cirque du Soleil performer. As we return to the school dork and a pep talk from one of the greatest TV dads of all time.
I don't think my grades would have been all that great.
You know, that's so typical of you, Dan. Come on, you're a bright kid. You don't apply yourself.
Yeah, look, I don't even know if I want to go to college. I don't know anything about anything.
Well, I'll tell you something. You got to be more self-confident. You got to be more aggressive. Now, give me that Springsteen tape. I got a date tonight.
Did I say pep talk? I meant trying to force his kid to be something that he doesn't want to be. It's funny how often that gets confused with actual confidence.
I remember my senior prom. I had the hottest chick in Bedford Falls on my arm.
Bedford Falls, huh? I'll bet the date went something like this.
Why don't you kiss her instead of talking at her desk?
How's that?
Why don't you kiss her instead of talking at her desk? Oh, youth is wasted on the wrong people.
But enough about Robin Thicke's conception. We must now go back to the shy, quiet girl grappling with sudden popularity.
Wait, I remember when I was a little girl way back in the 70s, when I saw this old picture of my mom when she was in high school. And she was wearing the most fabulous gown. Come on.
This is great.
You like it?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we get to see the home life of a girl with actual popularity, as alternate universe Kelly Bundy grapples with parental prom preparations.
Mother, please, can't you make him stop?
Larry, will you please stop making that racket and come in? We're going to be late.
Mom, promise me that you and Daddy won't fight tonight.
Oh, come on, honey. Come on. We don't fight. We talk. Loudly sometimes, right, Nancy?
Right, right.
The number one excuse of soon-to-be divorcing parents since the dawn of time. But go on.
You and I both know that I could have been a professional guitar player.
Oh, God, here we go again. Poor Larry had to get a job.
Yeah, well, someone had to put Bree on the table.
Hey, hold it. Do you think you're the only one here who's had to make sacrifices? Do you think it's been my life's ambition to become a substitute teacher?
We're doing it again. Right now.
Pushing each other's buttons. Just like the marriage counselor told us.
I just wish he would tell us why.
Because you clearly both hate each other's guts. Who needs a psychologist to tell you that? Let's bring back Alyssa Milano and her plans to go stag.
Miss Shelley Sheridan?
Yes.
Mr. Kevin McRae awaits the pleasure of your company.
Great. Oh, you look so beautiful. I think I'm gonna cry.
Me too, Mom.
Oh. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, honey.
Bye.
Have a good time.
Bye.
Where to, miss?
Just drive until this runs out.
And now the final piece of this prom puzzle, the parents of Tracy Gold. One's a preeminent psychiatrist from both Boston and Seattle when he's not terrorizing Springfield with rakes. And the other's a housewife who thinks Ferris Bueller's a righteous dude.
Honey, you look so pretty in that dress.
Look at you. What is that on your face? What kind of a girl wears a dress like that?
It's Mom's.
Talk to your mother that way. It's me already. You are not going anywhere with that punk.
But, Daddy, I want to go to my prom.
Yes, well, the only place you're going is to the bathroom to wash your face.
You're ruining my life. You can't do that.
Listen, you'll thank me for this later, darling. Or don't bother coming out until you've got all that goo off your face.
That was the back door, Ed.
Mother, get your coat.
What for?
We're going to the prom.
Prom night with the Pence family will return. Right now, Act 2 shows our participants promward bound, starting with parallel universe Kelly Bundy and her monosyllabic Bing.
I can't believe it's finally here. Prom night. Our night.
I just don't understand why this prom is such a big deal to you.
I told you, if we become king and queen of the prom, it'll help us get into the right sorority and fraternity at Central State, which will allow us to make business contacts that will pay off when you become a CPA and I become an advertising executive. And we're going to need a six-figure income if we're going to afford two Jaguars and a vacation home in Maui before we have our two children at age 33.
This dialogue exchange was brought to you by the 1980s. The 80s. It's Reaganomical.
Awesome! Totally awesome!
Meanwhile, Carol Seaver and the adult-looking 18-year-old discuss their plans for the evening.
Well, then you will love the place I'm taking you for dinner tonight. It's called Ristorante Federico, which means Fred's restaurant.
Ristorante Federico, I've heard of it. It sounds wonderful.
Grazie. Then we'll make an appearance at the prom and maybe drop by at Patrice's party. And we'll do some stuff. Then we'll go for the traditional breakfast at HUD's. How does that sound?
Sounds perfect.
All the while, Sideshow Bob and Mrs. Poole from the Hogan family are hot on their tail.
Did you see that?
Did you see that?
What?
He's lowered his hand. Where is his hand?
Oh, it has settled down now. I'm sure he's just reaching for the cigarette lighter.
Oh, that's perfect. 5 minutes in the car with that punk already, she's smoking.
Oh, come on, Frasier. What would your agent say?
I love the first puff. Pulling it into my lungs. Little fingers of smoke filling me. Caressing me, watching it flow out of me in a lovely, sinuous cloud. No two ever quite the same.
Meanwhile, the school dork has his own plans for prom night, attending an all-night B-movie marathon, hopefully without the assistance of robots on a satellite, when who should he come across but somebody else without a date?
Look, I could have gone to the prom if I wanted to, okay? Five guys asked me to go.
Why? Why didn't you go with one of them?
Because I was waiting for Kevin McRae to ask me. So, what are you doing here?
I'm hiding. From my father. See, he'd kill me if he knew I didn't make it to the prom.
Just don't tell anyone from school you saw me here, okay?
Who would I tell?
So, let me get this straight. You've got two people trying to hide from the prom for various reasons. One is clearly higher up on the social ladder than the other, while said other is frequently alone and his father keeps pushing for him to take more chances in life. If you can already see what's going to happen next, congratulations for not needing an eye exam. But that's going to have to wait, as Carol Seaver and her still strangely adult-looking teen companion go to dinner, and Sideshow Bob is right behind them.
Buonasera, signore. The cafeteria is downstairs by the shoeshine stand.
Listen, did you see a nice girl and a punk come in here?
Scusa, signore?
Oh, Ed, I'm sure she's fine. Why don't we just go out and drive around the block somewhere?
Fine, is she? What do you think he's plying her with right now?
Water?
Give us a table, fella.
I think I have just the table for you, eh? Mario, take these people to the table by the, gabinetto.
Ooh, thank you.
I'll spare you the wait on the joke. Gabinetto in Italian means... But enough Duolingo for now. Let's go to the prom. And for the sake of this being an audio show, I should probably paint an image for you. Think of the most 80s-looking designs known to mankind. Now, slather all of it with the color puce and, for some reason, the Eiffel Tower, and you've got yourself a prom theme. Or, quite possibly, a reason to take Dramamine without ever setting foot on a boat. I'm not even a fashionista by any means, but I know gaudy when I see it, folks.
It's that gaudy.
Harris in Puce. A color scheme brought to you by the 1980s. The 80s, where good taste takes a back seat, bound and gagged with a spoon in the trunk.
Awesome! Totally awesome!
Patrice, your dress looks like the tablecloths.
Of course. I'm the only girl here who goes with the room. You know, when I'm named queen, I hope that gold tiara doesn't clash.
I'm really not starting to like you. Just so you know. And while we're in the middle of a time-filling party montage, this would be as good a time as any to talk about some behind-the-scenes info on the movie's production choices. Bear with us, because like all trivia, it's a bit on the trivial side, obviously. But I want to be sure that the people working on the movie get their dues, too. Circling back to the Variety article, and I'm quoting from this point forward, Dance Till Dawn was filmed completely in practical locations, as opposed to building sets on a soundstage. Although the Coconut Grove Club in the Ambassador Hotel served as a more traditional set, where they set up camp to shoot the actual prom scenes. It was sort of baptism by fire, says director Paul Schneider, whose background was primarily in theater before Dance Till Dawn. There was much to do. So many actors, so many locations, all that complicated logistical stuff at the prom. I wanted it to work, and I wanted it to be good. The biggest challenge, Schneider remembers, was getting the fun of the prom and not getting overwhelmed with the logistics of everything in the short amount of time we had. The production team also collaborated on the iconic prom theme, Paris in Puce. Although Larry Sinitsky says the general idea was for the theme to be created at the script level, the look of the space, which was decked out in puce and white polka-dotted tablecloths and an Eiffel Tower decoration done in lights as well as the costumes, from Applegate's puce and white polka-dotted ensemble to Milano's frilly pink princess dress to Tracy Gold's sparkly black halter gown, were the meeting of the minds among them. It was really just supposed to depict a night of fun, Sinitsky says. Entertainment was the ultimate thing, and there was an escapism in television. End quote. I promise there's a plot to sift through here, as our On the Rocks chaperones vent on how music just isn't the same then as it is now. Or at least the now of back then. Try not to think about that too much.
Gee, they call this music, huh?
Right.
See, I don't think these kids know what real music is.
Yeah. Remember Crosby, Stills, and Nash?
Yeah, the Righteous Brothers. Remember, you lost that loving feeling?
They don't play music like that these days.
Yeah, see, maybe they'd like to hear some of them. You know, I mean, maybe they're tired of this canned stuff. They'd like to hear some real music. I could go get my guitar.
And I'll just hide in the case.
See, that's not what you said when I sang at our prom. You remember? I do. I recall. You said I was groovy.
That's not true. I never said you were groovy. I never said the word groovy. It's a stupid word, groovy.
Yeah, I can think of at least one person who would disagree with you there.
Sure, I could have stayed in the past. Could have even been king. But in my own way, I am king. Hail to the king, baby.
And speaking of B-movies...
Please, this is happening. I'm going to die. I'm simply going to die.
They're only 10th graders.
10th graders from Hoover High. Everybody knows me at that school. If they see me, the whole world will find out that I didn't have a date to the prom, and you have no idea how humiliating that would be.
Look at that girl on the ground.
Maybe she dropped some change. Come on. Hey, get off those seats. Get back there. Come on.
Hey, who do you think you are?
I am an usher. Thank you very much. Why do you think I have this tux on, huh? To go to the prom?
Well, we're not doing nothing. That's right.
Don't give me any of that lip, young man. Now sit down and be quiet. There are decent people in this theater, and they're trying to watch Ants.
Yes, sir.
As we now join Ellen Thicke on a date already in progress.
So you have a child, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But not to worry, he's going to be out late tonight, so you and I have this place to ourselves until morning.
Is it the senior prom?
Oh, then what's his corsage doing here?
Oh, well, he must have forgotten that.
I think you should drive this over to the prom.
What? No, forget that. I mean, no, I think that would just embarrass him even more. You know how fragile the male adolescent ego is?
Oh, yes, I do. I wrote a paper on it. Come on, let's take it to him.
So, let's recap. One story is about a snobby couple hoping being voted prom king and queen will elevate their status, a sub-story about her parents seemingly on the brink of collapse in their marriage, another storyline where a wallflower wants to go to prom with somebody who wants to do some deflowering while her parents act all self-righteous cockblocker, another story with two kids avoiding the prom for completely polar opposite reasons, and now we have Alan Thicke wanting to score even though his date wants him to do the noble thing for his son.
Everybody got that? Good!
And you wonder why people like to spike the drinks on prom night. Act 3 picks up where our two non-prom exiles left off, by doing what they can to kill time until sunrise, including ordering food from a Burger King disguised as a Long John Silver's if it were run by Lawrence Welk's Bubble Machine. Okay, did somebody slip me a copy of Mad Libs again?
I'll have two Bobbin burgers, two regular fries, and two large ice waters, please.
And I'd like a Moby Fish burger, the whale-sized fries, onion rings, a chocolate shake, a cherry pie, and a couple of shrimp kebabs.
Now that's a girl after my own heart. A brown-eyed brunette who can pound down food, not fall victim to eating disorders, still look reasonably thin, and be able to afford that much food for less than $20. Either that, or this really is a fantasy movie. But picking out will have to wait, because what are the odds? Milano knows the people who work there.
No, don't. What the hell are you doing?
What?
I know that kid's voice.
Who?
What?
That's Stanley Lamar. His locker's next to mine.
Oh.
He'll recognize me.
What?
Oh.
Go.
So now it's back to the Italian restaurant where, uh-oh, Milano bumps into somebody else from her school, because this movie isn't hijink-tacular enough.
It's Kevin McRae. He's right over there. If he sees me with you, it will be the most humiliating moment of my life.
As opposed to squatting under a table in a 4-star restaurant?
It's worse than humiliating. Did you see who he was with? Did you? It's Dahlstrahl, the geekiest girl in the whole class. And worse than that, she's beautiful.
All the while, cockblocker Crane and the rental car lady from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles plan their next move.
$63 for the natural bounty of the earth?
They're leaving. Let's roll, Mother. Where's your wallet?
In my purse at home. What's wrong?
I left mine in the living room. Oh, this is just perfect. This is just great.
Well, you could always sing for your supper.
Sul tuo amore infranto.
It's so beautiful.
That's Sideshow Bob.
I know, and he's magic.
You thought I was going to pick the HMS Pinafore clip, didn't you? Come on, I'm not that predictable. Back to the dance, and also back to the deteriorating marriage of our prom chaperones.
You and I have to spend the next 8 to 10 hours together? What the hell are we gonna do?
Well, we can certainly rule out sex.
Oh, what a shot! What a shot! Well, pardon me, Miss Joan Collins. And I suppose that's all my fault. No, right, I suppose I'm just the lousiest lover in the world. Yeah, I suppose, and that's the only reason why we haven't made love in 2 years.
Boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
Here we go.
What you said the last time.
It worked this time, trust me.
Hey, you, come here. What is the matter with you? We're running out of crab puffs. Get in there.
Crab puffs? Well, of course. Coming right up.
Why didn't you bring more crab puffs? And how many times do I have to tell you to wear a white jacket?
Okay, I've waited long enough. From this point forward, every time Kelsey Grammer says something that winds up putting egg on his face, I'm just gonna do this. And if you know that sound, congratulations. We can be friends.
Weird. Isn't she beautiful out there?
She certainly is. I'll have a mind to go out there and drag her home.
Ed, you promised.
I know.
She's never betrayed our trust before.
No, she's never been on a date before.
Ed, she's 18. She can vote.
I'm not too crazy about that either.
Ed, she voted Republican. What more do you want?
And as the prom continues, another subplot emerges as Reaganomics Kelly Bundy is suddenly threatened over the fact that Carol Seaver has learned how to use makeup.
Look at her, Roger. I don't get it. You tell me, why is everybody making such a big fuss over her?
Huh?
Perhaps the most intelligent lines I've heard in this entire movie. The ones where Matthew Perry simply goes, huh? Proving once and for all that silence is golden. As for the proof of that, I'm about to be silent for the next 2 minutes or so. We'll continue to dance our way into oblivion.
After the break.
Hi, I'm Alan Thicke here in Las Vegas, the most exciting city on earth, with an offer you cannot refuse.
For a limited time, Tahiti Village, the newest five-star resort in Las Vegas, is offering a complimentary 3-day, 2-night, second honeymoon getaway to Vegas. You'll have the romantic time of your life, and it won't cost you a dime.
You may even stir up a little romantic magic with everything Vegas has to offer. This offer is limited to people who love food, fun, dining, gambling, sports, big shows, big stars, and generally people just loving life. Come on in. The party starts when you get here. Space is limited. Fun is not. It's couples only. It's complimentary. Hey, if you call right now, we'll throw in a pair of tickets to one of those fabulous shows right here on the Strip. What happens in Vegas should be happening to you.
Only a limited number of complimentary packages available. Call this number now for details on this special offer.
This week on Telehell's premium content of the damned.
Both stations have quite a chummy team covering their newscasts.
Yeah, thank you. Nice tie.
Well, it was a gift from me. I gave it to him.
I gave it to him, too. Well, we went in halves.
What if they had over 160 people covering the news?
All of us here from where we are just want to say how good it is and hope you'll have a nice weekend. I had one.
Really?
No. Let's talk about me. Let's talk about us. We're pretty people, aren't we?
The only way to listen to Telehell's premium content of The Damned is by becoming a patron at patreon.com/telehellpodcast. For just a few bucks a month, you can listen to our premium content and get some swag along the way. Once again, that's patreon.com/telehellpodcast. And now, back to this week's torture.
Act 4 begins with subplot number who the hero knows at this point, as Alan Thicke tries to show his sensitive side by turning in the corsage his son was supposed to give his date. Three problems with that. No son around, no prom for him to go to, and no date.
Excuse me, could you get that to Dan Leftcourt?
Are you sure he came to the prom?
Of course I'm sure. My son missed his own prom. Had a good-looking date lined up, too. Nice rental tux. But he bought this corsage and...
Well, there's no Dan Leftcourt on the list. He never bought a ticket.
Never bought a ticket?
Well, now, what's the problem? I'm sure there's...
Well, the problem is my son lied to me. My son lied to me. That's the problem.
Look, I don't want to speak ill of the deceased, but I'm starting to think that maybe the big letter balloons in Robin Thicke's Blurred Lines music video should have spelled out, Alan is a big... You know the rest if you've seen it. As we see our two non-prommers continuing to avoid being seen.
I know this place outside of town. I am sure none of your friends would go there.
It better be way outside of town. Where is it?
Another planet.
Yes, another planet. aka the place where the writers of this movie think teenagers from the 80s hail from, which would probably explain some of the fashion choices of the era, but I digress. Meanwhile, back at the prom, bureaucracy!
So your prom king for this year is Kevin McRae. And now, the moment that you've all been waiting for, your prom queen is Shelley Sheridan. Oh, wait, Shelley Sheridan isn't here, ladies and gentlemen. So, as head of your prom committee, I move that we elect a new queen.
Insert political validation here. So, where is the girl who would be prom queen? Out there in the real world, realizing that there's more to life than cliques and social status.
How'd you learn all this stuff?
I guess astronomy's a good hobby. You know, when you have your nights free, and those nights are usually on Saturday nights.
My Saturday nights aren't all that great either.
What are you talking about?
Why do you think being popular is so important to me?
I have no idea.
Let's put it this way. You're not the only one who feels alone inside. Maybe we just handle it in different ways.
And as a young Chuck Lorre and Bill Prady store this scene away for a future sitcom idea about nerds and hot chicks interacting with each other, a nearby amateur astronomer waxes philosophy to the two youngsters.
You're standing in front of Venus, kid.
Fred.
Danny.
How's it going? Good night tonight, eh?
Oh, Fred, this is Shelley.
Hi.
Fred's the most brilliant man I've ever met.
Are you a professor at Central?
No, I'm a toll collector on the turnpike.
What are you doing with this nerd?
She's not a nerd. You and I, we're nerds.
What's that star over there, the real bright one?
That's not a star, that's Venus.
You look through the little end. Don't touch the knobs.
Even I know who Venus was. The goddess of love, right?
I've seen enough to put you in a certain amount of jeopardy.
Now knock that off!
I should have known what I was getting myself into with another NBC TV movie from 1988.
Venus was the most beautiful goddess ever. She dated a lot, and all the other gods wanted to marry her.
So who'd she choose?
Why, Dr. Pepper, of course.
Don't leave the house. There's plenty of food in the fridge.
I am not here for your cold roast chicken. I am here for your love.
But in actuality...
She married Vulcan.
What's so funny about that?
Nothing, I guess. I mean, Vulcan was, you know, a nice guy and everything. It's just that he was the ugliest god in the heavens. Sort of like a nerd god.
Sweet Lucifer. Greek mythology may have actually predicted
every sitcom ever made since the dawn of time.
You know, a hot chick falling for a schlub or a loser? So obvious. Meanwhile, back at the prom, the results of the recounted election for prom queen.
It is my great pleasure to announce Hoover High School senior prom queen, Angela Stroll.
Yep. Let that be a lesson to you, voters in November. Don't vote for the people who can make your life a living hell. Vote for them because
they're hot.
What could possibly go wrong? We find out as the king and queen dance their dance, and... Say, remember Tempest Bledsoe being in this movie? I know she was there for the first 20 minutes, but here we are 50 minutes later, and all of a sudden...
You're friends with Angela Stroll. Hey, you think maybe you could fix me up with her?
Gee, I don't know. She's going out with Kevin McRae, you know.
Yeah, I know. And I know why.
What are you talking about?
Come on, you know. Because Angela does it.
Does what?
She does it. She does it. The whole town says she does it.
Oh, that one's for you, Joe. And also for you, John, wherever both of you are today. But getting back to the point, it looks like we finally reach what is definitively the A-plot of the movie, as Vanessa Huxtable must stop her friend from
going all the way!
But first, Act 5 sees our two non-prommers finally enjoying themselves by getting a little bit of dancing in their system and under the starlight.
There you go, that's it.
Oh. I really appreciate this, Shelley.
Oh, don't mention it. You're getting it.
Yeah, right.
Do you always have to wear glasses?
No. I just need them for reading. But I like them.
Oh, no. Please don't tell me she does that thing where she takes off his glasses and all of a sudden he's 1,000% hotter.
I think you look good without them. I can see your eyes.
I hate that cliche.
A cliche brought to you by the 1980s. The 80s. Superficiality is the real currency.
Awesome! Totally awesome!
But all the fawning over the lack of optical wear will have to wait. For Alan Thicke is on the rampage!
Oh, I wish I was on Saturn. It's my father.
And speaking of parents who are annoyed, back to Bob Newhart's second TV wife and... who's this guy? The guy from... Carnosaur 2. I'm sorry, Cliff DeYoung. I'm sure you did other things in your career that were much better than that.
Whoever thought it would turn out like this? Hoover High, class of 66. Couple most likely to get married.
Yeah, and we did, just like everybody said we should.
Hello, baby. And now it's time for a little slow dancing.
Perfect. They're playing our song.
That's how it all got started.
I guess it's appropriate it should end on the same note.
In that case, I think we should have one last dance.
And while the couple shares their supposed last dance as a married duo, one more tap into the Variety article on some of the music choices this movie made. And again, I quote, "The script originally called for a band to perform at the senior prom," actor Richard Rudolph recalls, noting he immediately flagged that as not time conducive to the shoot because everybody would have to be in sync and pantomiming their tracks while actors performed dialogue over them in multiple shots, takes, and scenes. And it wasn't one song you were shooting to. You had songs going on all the time, and you had to try and make it a cohesive thing. Rudolph suggested featuring a DJ at the prom instead. He can be a character, part of the fabric of the piece, some kind of connective tissue, he told producer Larry Sinitsky. He loved the idea, and talked Rudolph into playing the DJ, who was named for him and became an iconic image in the movie for his 80s tease long hair and musical performance. Rudolph says he did not actually sing, but instead used tracks that Michael Cimbello had recorded. All of the actors, they thought, I really was this guy, DJ Dick. And on more than one occasion on the shoot, they'd come up to me and say, "Hey, DJ Dick, we're having a little party afterwards. You want to come hang out with us?" And I would go, "I have kids your age. I don't know what you're thinking about here." Rudolph says, "Larry's still in trouble for making me do it, but I became like a cult hero to my daughter's friends at the time because they loved all of the kids who were in it." Rudolph used a combination of licensed tracks and originals for the music, including a re-recording of Heatwave's Groove Line, a cover of the Righteous Brothers' You've Lost That Loving Feeling, and an original song, Rock Until You Drop, which he wrote with both Cimbello brothers. When you're watching a movie, sight and sound are both equally important. The music is half of the senses you're using, so it has to be right, he says. The best stuff is collaborative, and the stuff I'm happiest to work on is where music is not just a post-production element, where it becomes an emotional postcard of the piece." End quote. Now, I know what you're thinking. Why bring up any of this at all if all I'm gonna do is keep trashing the movie, even though it sounds like the people involved have put their best effort in on this? Because I've learned something important over the past few years. That no matter if a production is good or bad, a lot of hard work still goes into these productions, whether it be in front of the cameras or behind the scenes. And it shouldn't be their fault if there's something on TV that I don't like. And of course, the reminder that whenever we review TV movies around here, that we only review the content of the movie, nothing else. But considering Variety seemed to have gone out of its way to talk about something that would otherwise be obscure, what the hell? I can't help but tip my hat off to the crew after finding out all of this information, even if the rest of the movie is contrived and derivative. Speaking of which...
Where are you? Come on, I know you're up here.
That nut ought to see a psychiatrist.
As long as it isn't me. Hey, could you give me a lift home?
Well, sure.
Oh. This is a miraculous night.
Okay, now I'm convinced that Chuck Lorre and Bill Prady used this movie to come up with the Big Bang Theory. Too many stars are aligning here, figuratively and literally. So now, Alan Thicke is left in the dust.
Why do you think you're so angry with your son?
I told you, because he lied to me.
And why do you think he lied?
Well, he couldn't get a date.
Now, why should that be so important to you?
Because I want him to be...
To be what? Exactly like you? Rest assured, you and your son do have something in common now. Neither one of you has a date.
Show me that smile again. Don't waste another minute on your crying. We're nowhere near the end.
That sucks.
And while that's happening, let's check in with Ed Rooney's secretary and Mr. Toss Salad and Scrambled Eggs. Mercy.
Let's go home, Mother.
Well, Ed, what's gotten into you?
Well, I was just thinking about how sexy you looked on our prom night. Remember what I said when I first saw you in that dress?
Yeah. Where's the zipper?
That very dress that Angela is wearing right now.
Oh, Ed, look at her. She just looks so happy.
Mother, we are not leaving.
And with one's virginity and purity on the line, this looks like a job for...
Professor Huxtable!
Kevin only asked you out tonight because he heard that you were easy. You have never been asked out in your entire life, and then on the night of the prom, the coolest kid in school comes up and asks you out? You've never gone out on a date in your life. Just get your stuff and let's get out of here.
The first completely logical and rational thing I've heard in this entire movie.
I'm not going anywhere with you. Look, I'm having too good of a time. I'm staying with Kevin. Angela, you have to listen to me. I'm your friend. No. All I know is that this is the best night of my entire life, and I am not going to let you ruin it.
So now, the stakes are set in Act 6. Will Carol Seaver remain pure? Will Samantha Maselli get over her social status? Will the parents of these kids realize that said kids are simply growing up? Will Matthew Perry say more lines in this movie than just, huh? Let's answer one of those questions as the school dork and the star of Teen Steam head to another overused cliche in things like these, the old inspiration point.
What are you gonna do with your life?
I never really thought about it. I mean, I do think about it a lot, but I still don't know.
Looks like neither of us know what we're gonna do.
Yeah. I'm scared, Dan.
Me too.
You wanna take this one, Daria?
My goal is not to wake up at 40 with the bitter realization that I've wasted my life in a job I hate because I was forced to decide on a career in my teens.
I knew there was a reason why I loved you. And by association, Janine Garofalo. But all the pondering is gonna have to wait. Because...
This is where everyone goes to make out. We're parked at Mount Everest. This is a nightmare. That's Joe Sharp and Claudia Wallach. Look! That's Dan Spurlock and Annie Palmer. Any second, they're gonna look over here and they're gonna see me. Will you please do something?
She does it. She does it. The whole town.
Okay, no. It's a family TV movie from the 1980s, but they do get close and the Big Bang Theory gets closer to existence. Meanwhile, let's check in on Miss Chenandler Bong and Samantha Hu.
Do you have any idea what happened tonight, Roger? We lost. We're losers. You know, I was planning on getting into the best sorority at Central, but now I'll be lucky if we're rushed by an audiovisual club.
Excuse me, you kids realize it's time and a half after midnight, don't you?
Huh?
It means you pay him a little extra, Roger, along with the appropriate tip. What's the big deal?
Well, you know, I bought you that ring.
Yes, so?
I only have 32 cents left.
Thank you, Discount Ferris Bueller Soundtrack. Let's check in with the prom's after party. And since this is 1988, minus the tales of that one time in band camp? If you know, you know.
Bad news, guys. Angela wants to go to HUD's, and since there's no way to get into the house anyway, it looks like we're gonna have to go out a few more times before we, you know. Hey, it's too bad. Damn.
It's no problem, dude.
What? What are you doing?
Oh, you kids. Always wanting to party, even if it means committing a felony or two to pull it off. To be young again. A sentiment that our eminently breaking up couple wants to reflect on in the twilight of their marriage.
Hey, 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 look at
what?
This. Look at this.
Wait a minute.
What?
It's here. It's here. Look, see? Larry loves Nancy, 66. You remember?
Yeah.
You remember what happened next? Right after I carved this?
You proposed to me.
Yeah, and then the next thing I know, I'm out looking for a job. We're renting an apartment. I'm buying a house. Then Patrice came. We were too young. If you had it to do over again, would you still marry me?
Well, so much for losing that love and feeling. I guess they're going to be one of those divorced couples who stay very good friends and will probably still live together to save a buck or two while becoming very good friends with their inevitable second spouses.
That's a thing. Shut up.
Meanwhile, Mrs. Herb Tarlek and Stinky Pete track down their daughter in the hopes that their moral stances are enough to get their daughter out of the clutches of prom night promiscuity.
Ed, we just go on home. I'm sure this party is chaperoned.
And who is their chaperone, Caligula?
So now, let's get to the matter at hand. Does she does it, or doesn't she?
You know, Kevin, before tonight, I felt kind of, I don't know, out of it. Like I didn't fit in anywhere. I mean, I didn't have too many friends at school. Only one, really. And my parents are so really hard to talk to. And now it's like in one night, my whole life changing. I feel like somebody, and it's all because of you.
I really like you, Angela.
Oh, no!
I am wounded!
Oh, of course she rejects his advances, and of course that just signals him to advance even further, which causes even further rejection, and once again, it's a broadcast network TV movie from the 80s. If they wanted to push the envelope, this would have aired on the Fox network.
This is the reason you asked me to the prom.
Okay, wait. Now maybe that was the reason that I asked you at first, but now that I've gotten to know you, I really do like you. I mean it, Angela.
You got it backwards, Kevin. You should have liked me first.
Okay, you're right. But, I mean, we could still go out together, can't we?
No, it's too late.
Well, you can't say the moral majority wasn't good for some things back then. Let's check back in with Veronica Corningstone, TV's third Oscar Madison, and the star of a talk show spearheaded by Fred Silverman.
Hey, you kids go to Hoover High?
Yes, we do.
Well, am I glad to see you.
Oh, not as glad as we ought to see you.
You're in the senior class?
Yes, that's right.
Have you seen Dan Lefcourt? I've been looking all over for him.
That geek? Why would we have seen him? I mean, he didn't go to the prom. He couldn't even get a date.
Well, we did see him buy corsage.
That's why he's a geek. I mean, who's he trying to fool?
His father. This is all his father's fault.
Wait, no!
Meanwhile, at Make Out Point, making out.
I believe we're the only ones left now. We could go home, but we don't have to.
Man, I was definitely born in the wrong decade. As Applegate and Perry continue experiencing comeuppances.
Do you know, I've learned something. I've learned that gold and diamonds and jewels aren't the most important thing in the world. Money is. Here, take it. I'm sorry, Roger. I know how you must feel. I know that ring symbolized the strength of your commitment to me.
$2.
What?
Imitation zirconium.
Thanks again, Discount Ferris Bueller soundtrack. So now that just about everything is all tied up, all that remains are the events of the morning after in the final act. starting with Alyssa Milano and the school, Maybe He's Not Such a Dork After All, reenacting the lyrics to Wake Up Little Susie. Ask your grandparents.
It's morning.
Yeah.
We should probably go home now.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny how things seem different in the morning.
And while their story is wrapping up, Carol Seaver apologizes to the timekeeper from Square One TV. And my apologies for a reference even I thought was in the millionth percentile.
Margaret, you were so right about Kevin. Oh my God, are you okay? Never been better.
God? What was it like?
It was terrific. I dumped him.
Oh my God. You dumped Kevin McCray?
It's just that nobody has ever treated me like that before. And I forgot who my best friend really was. Or is. Margaret, all I want to say is that I'm sorry.
Apology accepted, as Applegate finally comes home to see the kind of mess her so-called friends left in their wake.
Oh, this is lovely. The perfect end to a perfectly horrible night.
Well, it could be worse.
Oh, really, Roger? Could it be worse? Why don't you tell me, Roger, how could it possibly be worse than this?
You know, we have a noise ordinance in this city.
As we now whiplash ourselves to Mrs. Brindle from Small Wonder and the bad guy from Money Plane bumbling their way into things once more.
Ed, you can't climb up there. You got orthopedic shoes on.
I'll tell you what, Mother, get down on your hands and knees.
I don't think prayer will help.
I don't want to pray. I want to step on your back. I need a boost.
That does it. Give me your keys. I'm going home.
Well, fine.
Good.
Fine!
Good!
Which finally brings us to the climax of this jumbled up mass of stories. The moment where everybody meets at the local diner for breakfast after the prom. As you do, apparently.
That's a thing, shut up.
Where the last of the loose ends are getting tied up.
We have criminal records now, Roger. We're ex-cons. Our futures, our lives, our very careers are ruined. You can kiss any dreams of getting into a decent country club goodbye.
I never wanted to be in a country club anyway.
I wanted to be a lumberjack! Leaping from...
Come on, come on, come on. We don't have time to do the whole thing. Just finish the movie. Come on.
I'm going to pretend that I didn't hear that.
So what? You never listen to me anyway.
I'm not listening to this.
Like when I told you I didn't want to become a CPA. I don't even want to go to college. I want to be a fireman.
Oh, I'm a fireman and I'm okay.
Damn it, finish the story!
They brainwashed you in jail, didn't they, Roger?
And one more thing, Patrice. I don't want to be pre-engaged or engaged or married to you.
If it's any consolation, Matthew, you can, you will, and you did do better down the line. Even if it was as very memorable fictional characters.
I love you, Monica.
I love you too, Chandler.
That storyline's complete, so let's complete another.
Roger and I just broke up.
Oh,
sweetie, that's too bad. But you know what? It's probably for the best. What do you mean?
Your mom's right, honey. You and Roger were pushing it a little. You don't want to make the same mistake we did.
Don't say that. Your marriage wasn't a mistake.
Yes, it was. At least getting married so young was. And it's taken us 20 years to correct it.
Storyline number two complete, and wait, are they staying together? Did they reconcile and I completely missed it? Who knows and who cares? Let's wrap up Tracy Gold's story.
Don't let you listen to me, young lady. Get your things together, we're going straight home.
Daddy, what are you doing here?
I bailed him out.
Right. Now get your things together. Let's go, we're going home.
But I didn't do anything wrong. Nothing bad happened last night.
Oh, really? What do you call running out on a restaurant check, hmm? What do you call sneaking into a private party? Destroying hotel property? Breaking a window?
Oh, don't forget being arrested for voyeurism, Ed.
Right?
But I didn't do any of those things.
No, but I did!
Just be glad you didn't add attempted murder to that rap sheet.
Now, honestly, what is that? Do they give a Nobel Prize for attempted chemistry, do they?
And in comes Alan Thicke and storyline number four.
Hey, I know you, Hoover High, class of 69, you're Strull. Wild Man Strull.
Wild Man?
Well, just a nickname. Doesn't mean anything.
children are cruel.
Remember the time you streaked the girls' gym class? Whoa. They let you back in school after that, huh?
Yeah.
You ran naked in front of girls?
And that, the scandal that everybody was talking. It was, the girl you got pregnant. Her name was,
Ruth.
Ruth, yes. Red Hot Ruth. Red Hot. Well, it's great seeing you again, Wild Man.
Of course, Turnabout is fair play. As Grammer's uptight character gets exposed for being a wild man in his past, so must Alan Thicke's ladies' man getting exposed for being a nerd in high school.
Wait, I remember you. You're the weenie. Look.
No.
Yeah. No. Here, yes, Weenie Lefcourt.
It's Dr. Weenie, Dr. Lefcourt.
Hey, Weenie. You remember the time you came to the prom with your aunt? Tried to pretend you were dating a cocktail waitress.
Okay, all right.
Which segues us neatly into one final loose end, as well as one final middle finger to the concept of societal norms.
Hey. Oh my God, Shelley, what are you doing with that dweeb?
Going steady.
So the moral of the story is, damned if I know. There were so many things to keep track of, and yet the only common theme was that it was the prom. We'll try to decipher the most contrived prom night I've seen since the 1980 horror film Prom Night in the Nine Circles.
Limbo, lust, gluttony, greed, wrath, heresy, violence, fraud, treachery!
I know I might come off as a stick in the mud knowing how many people actually enjoy this movie, but truth be told, I felt hungover watching it. A movie that may have benefited from the phrase, less is more, thanks to the gluttonous amount of storylines to keep track of. A movie that turned out to be peak 80s excess in a number of ways, though largely through Christina Applegate's snob character being the poster child of greed for the decade. A very minor tag for violence thanks to breaking and entering into Applegate's house for the prom after party, and of course, what the prom is truly about.
All the hormones virtually ricocheting off the walls.
As well as the peer pressure for those to either give in or hold on to their lustful desires. But on the flip side to all of that, one final coda from the Variety article. Quote, "This kind of captured the world of the people who say, oh, the best years of your life are in high school," says producer Larry Zenitsky. "It's a little bit of a different world now. The stakes seem a little higher to me today." Instead, he sees the legacy of this movie as what came after it, the changes the movie inspired, not only with new projects that reached across demographics, but also the ones that starred his very cast. Quote, "What was so interesting was that after it was on, and it did so well, Brandon Tartikoff, the president of NBC, said the next Monday, 'This is what we should be doing,' he says. And at one point, Friends, Frasier, and the short-lived sitcom Jesse were all on. So NBC had the Thursday night lineup of those who had been in Dance Till Dawn years earlier. In a way, that was the aftermath of the movie," end quote. Proving once again, who knows what tomorrow will bring. Dance Till Dawn earns 4 out of 9 circles of Telehell. It was another one of those things that was equal parts dumb, but fun. But not so much that I would ever consider it a guilty pleasure. Then again, if those hacks over at CinemaSins have taught me anything over the years, it's that good things can have their flaws. And surely... Uh-oh. It's our seldom-used hex machine. It only gets triggered if somebody wants to make a request. Let's see. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Hmm. See? This is exactly what I'm talking about. Something that was considered good but flawed. And it looks like I've got another one of those to take care of next. Next time on Telehell. It's been a little while since we've taken on a Patreon request. As it turns out, it's another Fox failure involving beans.
Journey back to a magical time.
I don't like the sound of that car.
An era when miracles...
Relax, baby.
...were around every corner.
Oh, yeah. Just let him breathe.
This was a time of joy.
Soon, a regulated monthly bleeding called menstruation will begin.
This was the time of Oliver Beam.
Oh, my gosh, you're killing each other!
Oliver Beam. A new era in comedy begins Sunday, March 9th after The Simpsons on Fox.
Until then.
If it's not in telehell, it's not worth a damn.
Special thanks to the folks at RetroCirc for actually tape trading with me years before there was ever a telehell, for it was through them that I was able to obtain a copy of Dance Till Dawn with original commercials. Thanks a bunch, Yarnell. Telehell was written, produced, edited, and narrated by me, Justin Hart. All clips used in this program are protected under the Fair Use Doctrine of the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, and all clips used come courtesy of their respective companies and owners. Some of the music used in this program comes courtesy of YouTube and their audio library service. Telehell is a production of Horton Road and is distributed by Libsyn. You know that thing that people do in order to communicate with each other without actually having to look each other face to face? You know, social media? Well, we do that. Look for us on X, Facebook, and now Blue Sky. All three of them at Telehell Podcast. And don't forget to like, comment, rate, subscribe, and pretty much tell us what you think of our show everywhere that you can stream us. And also on our complaint line, telehellpodcast@gmail.com.